Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
It's not about me. I'm only here for a minute, and I know that I can't fix it. I can help even just a little bit. Won't you let me try?
Hello, welcome to Les and Powers. This is Scott Powers, joined by Mark Lazarus. Mark, hello.
Bonsoir. That's that's the limit of my French.
That's good. Montreal, how's Montreal treating you?
It took a while to get here. I had about a 3-hour delay and then hit rush hour on the way. So the joys of travel again. I'm still at a zen state, I think, with the travel delays, where it's like, you know what? This is fine. I'm back on the road. I'm happy to be here. But looking forward to getting a smoked meat sandwich whenever we're done talking here.
Nice. You want to be done now? You just want to go?
Are we done? Can we wrap up? I'm hungry. I haven't eaten since the bagel I had at 7 a.m. I feel like I haven't been here in a while. The draft was supposed to be here last spring. We were all excited about that. And that didn't happen. So they're doing it this year. I'm looking forward to that, to have the whole staff together. But I feel like since I poached all the New York trips, since we've been partners on the beat, that I think you've taken Montreal every time, haven't you, the last few?
I think so, yeah.
It's been a long time since I've been out here. I'm excited to be back, although it's cold. It's like 8 degrees and snowing, but it's always like that here. I'm never here when it's nice. My wife and I came here in the summer once for like a day. We were up in we took like a road trip and we kind of branched off here for a day years ago. And now it's nice to be here in the summer. Every other time I've been here, it's been cold and snowy. Never fails.
Yeah, I think I've been there once when it was nice too. There was one trip that was 3 or 4 years ago. I just remember the snow being so deep, and it was just one of those. I had a great Canadian trip a few years ago where I this must have been like 4 or 5 years ago, because I went to go see a 410. Like, it was like it worked out where I was able to see 2 prospect games and then 2 NHL games, and I was driving all through Canada. And I was, what's that podcast, the history of one of the podcasts that's like the history of something, where like really long podcast, like 4 or 5 hours long, you know.
I listen to Hardcore History a lot.
Yeah, Hardcore History, maybe. That's what it's up. Yeah. So I remember listening to one of those and just driving through Canadian roads that I couldn't see anything and just hoping I didn't hit a deer or something, you know?
You know, I almost feel like when I'm in Canada, it's got to be this way. Like, it feels like it's hockey to me when you're, like, if I'm in Canada, it's like 50 degrees and nice. Like, it's supposed to be fine in Toronto after this. It's going to be like raining and like 48 degrees. That's not Canada weather. I want this, you know? This is, you know, I'm coming to Canada. At least give me the Canadian experience, right? Come on.
So hockey. I was at last night's game, obviously, and the game seems so secondary to what happened to Drew Jarkera and that hit, and certainly the news was encouraging today about him being able to get out of the hospital, and just how he obviously probably has a bit of a road here to get back to playing hockey, and it's been a bunch of concussions. You know, I guess he hasn't been diagnosed with a concussion, but he's obviously had a bunch of head hits here for a while, so maybe it'll be a while before they get him on ice. But it was certainly a scary moment being there, and just how you saw him go down as he did, and then how quickly they bring out the stretcher, and just the reaction from the players. Like, you're so far away, you don't really get to see it up close. How serious it is, but he just had an indication based on everyone else's reactions, just how bad it looked, you know?
Yeah, I was watching on TV, and my kid came running down the stairs because she heard me like just go, ah, like when it happened. Like, it was like a visceral reaction, because it was so violent. Like we're used to seeing big hits in hockey, but there are some that just like, they take your breath away, and it's like, oh my God. And I just kind of exclaimed out loud, and my kid came running. It was just, you know, he's out before he hits the ground. His head hits the back of his head hits the ice. He's got his arm still up, like when he's on the ground. I mean, it's just a terrifying scene.
Yeah.
And you know, usually you see a guy like when they're slow to get up, they start moving, but he wasn't moving around. I mean, it's everything you fear. I mean, I thought you put it really well in your piece today about how it's really hard to, like, for us as bystanders, basically, to get back into like thinking about hockey after that. Just imagine what it must be like for his teammates to have to go and try to play a game. You see it in football happen, frankly, more often than you see it in hockey. But it's really hard to kind of like, you know, refocus your brain on something that seems as trivial as a regular season hockey game when you don't know what this guy's status is. This is your teammate. This is someone you care about. And, you know, it doesn't seem like there's going to be any discipline on Jacob Trouba. I get it. He's tall, and Jujhar Khaira had his head down. I get that. His head was down. It's a cardinal sin for hockey. I get all that. But he didn't have the puck, and all the contact was directly into the jaw. I don't see how that's a legal cleanup. He didn't get a penalty. He should have got interference. There should be a suspension for that. I mean, I don't see why the NHL, you know, there's this, you know, since Rule 48 about how NHL takes head hits seriously, and they don't. They just don't. The IIHF, the International Hockey Federation, has a rule. It says in the rule book, there is no such thing as a clean check to the head. None. No gray area whatsoever. It doesn't matter the situation. You hit a guy in the head, you're out. And the NHL needs to adopt something like that because we've seen too many guys have their careers. I mean, Jeremy Colleton was one of them, who had his career cut short by concussions. You know, and, you know, I know the players will say, well, we'll police ourselves, but, you know, punching each other in the head is not a good response to a guy getting a head injury. And I don't know what the answer is here. I don't know how to fix this. It's a fast and violent game. These hits are always going to happen. But if we don't legislate them when they happen, they're just going to keep happening more. You need to throw the book at anyone who does this, like the Rafi Torres, Marian Hossa hit 10 years ago. If someone does something like this, you have to penalize them. At least make them think twice about a hit like that. I mean, if you're going to skate on it, then what's the point? What are we doing here?
Yeah, there's no... No,
I don't think it was malicious and dirty. Even.
No. I was going to say that I don't. No one's going to not get to hit someone because they have to fight someone after or anything. They probably look forward to fighting. Yeah. You know, like it's like it's hard of like having to answer for that with Stillman's fight. Like, I mean, Stillman ended up losing that fight. You know, like there's nothing to that. Yeah, I mean, it would take the NHL to recognize that even fighting was dangerous, and you know, like it's for them, it's a slippery slope to it admitting. Yeah, CTE and all those different things. So I don't imagine any of that's going to change. You know, it's you know, when it becomes the playoffs that all this stuff, it doesn't happen as much. You know, like people are more careful because the games matter. And it's odd to me that it's during the regular season that this is the stuff that occurs and everyone's willing to fight or be a little bit more dangerous. Not that dangerous hits don't occur in the playoffs, but certainly people are more careful and understand, you know, like the suspensions and those type of things are more costly during the playoffs than they are the regular season.
It's just so inconsistently. And again, I don't think that Trouba was headhunting there, but it shouldn't matter. He hit the guy in the head. That's all that should matter. It seems so arbitrary. Something like Ian Cole got a fine, a $5,000 fine today for kneeing. And if you watch the play, it's a dangerous, dirty hit that he put on the guy. It means you could really injure, you could ruin a guy's career doing that. And he got a fine. And, you know, sometimes they get nothing. And then sometimes as well, you know, they legislate the injury, but not the hit. Well, this was the hit and the injury, and you didn't even get a minor penalty. I don't know what we're doing here.
Andrew Shaw may get fined out of this whole thing by calling
out. Good for Andrew Shaw, by the way. Good for him. Well,
and I was just going to say, though, that, I don't think it's going to happen to True, but Shaw, but I bet you Shaw gets fined. He's still an NHL player, right? And he calls
out. Technically, yeah. He's technically a teammate of Karras.
Yeah, so I wonder how that hits.
Yeah, he goes out there and he says, hey, NHL player safety, you're going to, I'm paraphrasing, I don't have it in front of me, but are you going to protect the players? Or are you going to put the blame on him like you always did on me for putting yourself in a vulnerable position? And yes, don't skate with your head down. I get it. But that doesn't mean that just because you do something, you make a mistake on the ice because you're fishing a puck out of your skates, doesn't mean everyone else has carte blanche to, you know, freaking attempted murder you. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, no, for sure. Hockey-wise, yeah, it seemed like the Blackhawks just, like, I know they wanted to respond and they're talking about playing for Cure and all these things, but it just seemed like they had no juice after that, and the Rangers are a better team regardless. I think it just Panarin is he's at another level when he plays the Blackhawks and Kane. I think it's always going to be that way. I was looking at the numbers today for a story tomorrow, and his shooting percentage is like 26% against the Blackhawks. Like it's a different level.
So let's talk about Panarin for a second, because like every time Panarin does anything, Blackhawks fans get up in arms about, oh, Stan. There's no way Artemi Panarin was going to be on this team in 2021 in any situation. The Blackhawks could have had him another year or two. There was no way they could have afforded, what is he getting, 11-5 right now? When you've got Taves and Kane making 10-5 each? I mean, what would the rest of the team be? It would be the Rockford IceHogs. There was never any way they were going to be able to keep three megastars like that for that long.
Yeah. What I didn't get is that they had just negotiated this really good bridge deal, you know?
Yeah.
Like at $6 million. Like it was one of the few deals that Bowman seemed to get right during that period, and he just agreed to it. Like he agreed to that because he wanted to be with the Blackhawks. $6 million was a very fair price. And you had him for 2 years. And maybe in that second year, if things aren't going right, then he becomes a piece you trade at the deadline. But at that point, it was just such an overreaction to what happened. And yeah, for me, it was more of, I don't think Panarin's a Blackhawk now, regardless. But at that point, like it made no sense. Like you actually got a decent, decent contract, and you know, like he was happy to be there, and they were playing well. Like it was like their failures weren't Panarin's fault, you know. Like
yeah, there was this narrative that he was somehow soft in the playoffs. He was like a point a game guy against the Blues the year before, and everybody sucked against the Predators. Like none of this made any sense.
I think that's more of the point. Is that it was they had a good contract, and it seemed like an odd time, and it was another point of just like they never appeased Kane, you know. Like it was always it was whatever
guy elevates Kane to MVP status.
I mean,
wins the MVP, and then, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Kane and Panarin, like, throwing, you know, like, knocking pucks at each other when they're in New York and here, and, they, you know, like, Kane doesn't have that sort of relationship with any other player. Like, they've never, you know, like, maybe it would have been different if, you know, like, him and Sharp at a younger age or something like that, but Kane and Panarin were just something different on and off the ice, and this unique relationship, and played the game in such a different way, and it would have been interesting to see how that evolved, too. Like, I mean, Panarin was in the league for, what, 2 years, and then...
Yeah.
He gets traded, so it kind of came and went so quickly, and just to see Panarin playing at this level still, yeah, again, he's not a Blackhawk, but it's the 2 more years to see what Kane and Panarin would have done, and you know, if you kept that team together and maybe addressed it in a different way other than making those two trades that ultimately, at the time, I mean, Murphy ended up being a nice player, but it took him a while to get comfortable too. Like it wasn't like either one of those trades made them better in the immediate
right future. And we've hashed this out to death. Yeah. They could have kept the window open a little bit longer there had they just not overreacted to that Predator series, but I think you're right. Like Panarin has he has a way about him that no other Blackhawks really had since, like, you know, Sharp, Burrish, those kind of guys, that kind of playful spirit that he had that Kane was really drawn to. I mean, just at the Garden last week, where, you know, we're sitting there in the hallway outside the locker rooms. We can't go in the locker rooms, but they bring the players out to us. And Panarin had like 3 points that game, so he had to go do an interview. So he comes walking by, and he like slaps everyone in the back. Hey guys, how you doing? Hey! Like old boisters. I don't know if he actually remembers us or not. We're wearing masks. It's been 3 years. We didn't really talk much because he didn't speak English much back then. But he's just got this person, and then he comes back, and he's acting. We're still waiting, and he comes back through the other way. And he's acting like, you know, like a movie star on like the red carpet going, oh no, sorry guys, sorry, covering his face like for the pictures, like that nobody was taking. Like he's like a big kid, and he's always been a big kid. And like Patrick Kane was kind of a big kid, and they just kind of like gravitated toward each other. And you know, Kane has, you know, great relationship with Alex DeBrincat and with Dylan Strome. He had it with Nick Schmaltz before that. But it's like you said, it's never been like it was with Panarin, where it was like a real full-on bromance, where those guys just loved hanging out together, they loved playing together. They were, you know, two of a kind that played the game and fought the game like nobody else did. So they really just worked in. I you know, Kane will be the first to tell you, like, his play went down when Panarin left. Like, that was the best he ever was when he had Panarin on his wing. So I get everybody lamenting Panarin, and there are things to lament, certainly, but he was never going to be a Blackhawk in 2021. There was no way to make that math work.
No. Yeah, for me, it's always just the creativity. I enjoy creativity, you know? Like, it's just, you know, it's been Teravainen or Panarin or Kane, you know? Like, there's not a lot of players that, I mean, you see what Trevor Zegras did last night.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, you don't see that stuff so often. And the fact that Blackhawks had a handful of those players at the same time, like, it's, they have some nice players now, but it doesn't feel like that creativity's there. And right now, it's they're trying to play so simple just because they can't score goals. And, I was looking at the numbers today, and the 5-on-5 numbers are the lowest. They're averaging the fewest goals per 60 minutes in 5-on-5 since the 2013-14 Buffalo Sabres. So
you never want to be associated with the Buffalo Sabres of any year, really.
And this is after you tweeted that they scored 2 goals at 5-on-5, and then they just didn't score another goal after that in the first period yesterday.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Let's take a side trip down Trevor Zegras Lane here, because I mean, you and I remember covering that 2019 draft where there was like any number of guys. That was a wide open draft after Jack Hughes and Capo Caco, and you know, all of us had the Hawks either taking Alex Turcotte or Bowen Byram. They took Kirby Doc. Everyone was surprised by it, and then Doc wound up being the best player out of that draft the first year after that draft, and then everyone's catching up a little bit. Moritz Seider, who nobody thought was going to. Everyone was like, who the hell is that when Detroit took him? He's probably my Calder pick this year. You got, you know, Trevor Zegras is tearing it up and making these awesome, exciting plays. He's, you know, Patrick Kane was his hero. He was an option out there. Now, Bowen Byram, he's got some health issues, but when he's on the ice, he's absolutely electric. Everything people said he would be. And, you know, the rest of that draft is catching up to Kirby Doc and maybe passing him. Yeah. And, you know, I don't know if Zegras was ever really on the Hawks' radar at three. But I remember distinctly that draft from 3 to 9, you know, down to Peyton Krebs, I think, who went 17, but he was in that discussion too. It could have been anybody. And, you know, the fact that they didn't take Turcotte, who doesn't seem to be panning out very well so far with the Kings, you know, I guess certainly Kirby Doc's been a better pick so far than Turcotte. But you have to wonder now, you know, that draft, there's going to be a lot of guys coming through now that, you know, Jack Hughes is coming into his own. Caco is still a little slow. Doc is a good player, but he can't score very often. And you wonder how that draft is going to shake out now, you know, 5-10 years down the road.
Yeah, you know, I think for me, and I've talked to people about this, just that Stan Bowman was so set on drafting a center. Like, they wanted a center in this draft, and, you know, they fell in love with Doc. And, you know, like, there were people pushing for Bowen Byram, and there wasn't much love there. Like, it was, like, the Blackhawks' greatest need at that time was still defense, you know? Like, they'd gone... Obviously, they'd gone heavy in with Boquist and Boden and Mitchell and Yoki Haru, but none of them were panning out.
It wasn't exactly heavy.
Not exactly.
Get it? Because they were all small and light.
Yeah. At that point, I mean, Byram's the one that's, I mean, Boquist is actually playing pretty well, but Byram's the one that, you know, like, he was a little bit different than those guys. And, you know, like, if their greatest need was defense still, and Doc, like, he had a really good playoffs this year, and he obviously looks the part, and it's just the question's whether he's ever gonna, you know, like, he played well in his draft year in the WHL, but he wasn't killing it, you know, like, he wasn't like this, you know, like, he didn't put up these astronomical points, and there's a lot of talk too about, you know, having, you know, if they send him back the next year, like, maybe he has that breakout season and he gets in those repetitions and he, you know, just feels like being a superstar. Cause I don't think he ever felt that way. You know, like, he hasn't,
he's never been a monster. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, you look at that whole draft. I mean, there's a bunch of guys that, you know, like, I've seen Matt Boldy. I think it's going to be a stud for the Wild.
And Cole Caulfield.
Yeah. I mean, there's, Cabo Caco hasn't been, I mean, he's been okay for the Rangers, but,
the Rangers, I mean, you know, two straight years, everyone's freaking out about them winning the lottery, and Lafreniere and Caco, neither of them is really looking all that spectacular so far.
No,
they're young and still.
And Jack Hughes is looked nice, but it's not like, I mean, they're
he's definitely getting paid like a superstar.
Oh yeah, for sure. Right. Yeah. But you look at what Detroit's done, and I mean, that could have been the Blackhawks, like, if they got this right, you know, like, if Boquist and Doc, and, like, you had some of those picks that, if you do it right, like, I think the Blackhawks are in a lot better situation. I mean, they had the rebuild situation there to take advantage of, and obviously it hasn't panned out yet. So,
well, the good news is they're loaded with first round draft picks for the next. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. What's that? Oh, they're not. They're not at all. Oh my. Oh, okay. Scratch that. It's hard to be optimistic about the long term here, isn't it? I mean, you kind of look at this team and it's like, all right, they could be okay. They're playing okay now. And there's guys that can take next steps and things like that. But man, where's the contention coming from? How is this team going to become a legitimate contender again?
They don't have a goalie signed for next year other than than Soderblom and Rockford. Bring up
Drew Commesso already?
Yeah, I don't, like, it's just, it's, I Like, I'm sure Kyle Davidson wants to be a GM, but this isn't easy. Like, he's been handed a really rough card here, you know? Like,
it's, Stan painted him into a corner. He really did.
Yeah, like, they needed Strom, and I again, not giving up all my stuff for tomorrow's piece, but the Kubalik's really a strange case, you know? Like, he's his shots on goal and the scoring chances, everything is just it's vanished, you know? Like, yeah. The Blackhawks needed Strom and Kubalik and Doc and Borgstrom, all these guys to be legit, because they were going to carry them into the future. And right now, the way it is today, they're going to move on from Strom and Kubalik, and Borgstrom certainly isn't it so far. And, you know, like, Doc hasn't.
Yeah, Borgstrom's a guy, right? I mean, he's out there. He doesn't embarrass himself. He's doing okay. He makes, you know, he's around the net, but nothing happens. There's no production there.
Yeah.
And it's not like he's some, like, you know, Marian Hossa whiz in the defensive end. So he's just there. He's just they have so many guys that he's an just adequate there.
Player, yeah.
Yeah. They have so many, you know, middling to less than middling players on this roster.
And if you're playing to win 3-2, 2-1 games, like, there's such little room for error. And then it's what happens last night. You take a penalty, the Rangers score, and, you know, like, it gets out of hand occasionally. And you don't have a way of countering that, because they struggle to score goals, and they really thought they were going to be good in the power play, and I certainly did. You know, I think we bolted at the beginning of the season, and for Seth Jones not even to be on the top power play unit anymore, you know, yeah. Like, it's just it's changed so quickly. I don't, you know, they're certainly a better team than they were under Colleton, and I know you're going to work on a piece about kind of looking at some of those areas of what's gotten better and what's changed in the coming week, but. Yeah, I still don't know if this team is good enough. You know, like, it's good enough not to be the worst team in the NHL, but there's a lot of ways to go still to kind of find that next tier.
I mean, they're right where they've been the last 3 or 4 years, except probably a little bit worse, right?
Yeah,
that's a terrible place to be. They've been in a terrible place, and now they're a little bit worse than that. It's just, I don't know, man.
It's odd, because it's like they come back from that New York, you know, like the East Coast trip, and like, oh yeah, it's encouraging. They beat Capitals, you know, and. You know, they beat the Islanders, and then they lose the Rangers again, and, you know, it feels like it's they're just kind of running in place a bit, you know, like there's some optimism in them, you know, returned by some pessimism, and it'd be different if it wasn't, yeah, like if they were scoring goals or something was changing, but it feels like even I know, you know, Taves yesterday talking was, you know, like he's obviously struggling. He hasn't scored in 25 games, and there's certain parts of his game that he's doing fine. And Derek King's trying to emphasize that, but at the same time, it's
he's getting $10.5 million and he doesn't have any goals.
Yeah,
there's no way to sugarcoat. There's just no way to sugarcoat that.
Yeah, I don't, you know, like it's and I didn't really notice until I started digging the numbers today was that the he's been 10th in 5-on-5 ice time the last two games. Derek King starting to cut his minutes in some areas, and you know, it was interesting because I looked at Kane's numbers. I thought maybe Kane's production's been affected by Taves, but his 5-on-5 numbers have actually been better with Taves than they were even with DeBrincat. Like there's like DeBrincat and Kane, a lot of their success has been on 3-on-3 in the power play. So yeah, I don't know what the fix is at this point. You know, like I feel like they've jumbled the lines and. I'm not sure bringing up Hardman or Kurashev is really going to do a lot either. You know, like there's until Reichel comes, who's still in, you know, concussion protocol. And I know there's a question about Nylander that, you know, we'll go to the questions, but Nylander isn't it probably. I mean, the Blackhawks would have brought him up now if they were more optimistic about, you know, his player or what he could be. I think if Nylander was ready, they'd send him up because it still benefits. Like they need young players to pan out. Like they need some of these guys to pan out. And
yeah, Nylander's still a young guy. He's like what, 23 years old. I mean, there's still hope for there.
Yeah,
but it's taking time.
Yeah, I think that hope is it's definitely diminishing a little bit. So
that should be the Blackhawks motto this season. The Blackhawks hope is definitely diminishing a little bit.
Do you want to go through some questions here?
Sure. When will Nylander get a chance on the goal-starved Hawks, Brandon asks. Also, do the Hawks qualify Strom, Kubalik, or neither? I think we kind of just touched on all of that. Nylander, when he's ready, he'll play. But, you know, I don't. They're certainly not going to qualify Strom at the amount it would cost him at this point. They're hoping to move him, and if they don't move him, they would probably let him walk before, you know, giving him, you know, what would be $3.5-4 million or something like that on the qualifying.
I think it's 3.6. I think Kubalik's $4 million. So, yeah.
There's just no way.
If they could trade either one of them, they would. I think even now, like Kubalik, like it's like at the beginning of the season, like that seemed realistic. But he's, I mean, he needs a score goal too.
At the beginning of the season, I'm not sure Kubalik was in the long term plans either. I mean, the Hawks seemed ready to walk away from him rather than give a bunch of money to who they saw from based on who I've talked to. They saw him as a one dimensional goal scorer.
Yeah.
Now he's not even scoring the goals. Now the thing is, you could always just not qualify a guy and still re-sign them much, much cheaper. If Dylan Strome says, you know, I can't get more elsewhere, I want to stay where I'm comfortable, but I'll re-sign for $1.5 million. Maybe the Blackhawks do that. I don't know.
Yeah.
But that's a big pay cut that he would have to take in order to do that. And someone is likely to take a chance on a guy who is a number three overall pick and had 51 points in 58 games just 3 years ago. So it's the chances are low that either or certainly that both of them be on the roster next year. But again, like you said, who's taking their place? There's no first round draft pick coming in to take that spot. There's no stud prospect other than Lucas Reichel in the system to take those spots. Like, is it just going to be another Reese Johnson? How many Reese Johnsons can you have? The free agent class next year isn't that exciting, and it's mostly older guys, if I recall.
And I don't think they want to get in the situation where they're overpaying for free agents, too. You know, like, that doesn't do anything. Yeah,
their whole thing is they need financial flexibility with these contracts coming off the books. To just tie themselves down to another overpay would be the wrongheaded move.
Not that it's a really good thing, because you want Doc to be really good, but at this point, they don't have to pay Doc like Hughes, you know?
Oh, like, he'll be getting like $1.5 million, yeah. He won't be getting a whole lot at this rate.
Yeah, I think it'll be around like $3 million or so. But
yeah, he's playing number 1 minutes. They're gonna have to pay him, but it's certainly not going to be that, you know, like when Kane and Taves, their first contract was in the sixes, I think, or something like that. Their first bridge deal,
yeah,
something high. Sure. It's not going to be that.
Yeah, well, they had won that cup too at that point. Yeah,
yeah, that had helped.
Yeah,
a lot of Nylander questions actually. Let's see what else. Alex or whatever says, how are the prospects doing? Are any having standout seasons?
Ryder Rolston was a guy that they acquired from part of the...
You made that name up.
He was in the Soderberg trade from Colorado, like a kind of a throw-in piece. And he's actually been playing well for Notre Dame. He's a sophomore. He was just one of the Big Ten players of the week. I've asked people about him, and they seem to have sort of mixed feelings. But he skates well, and he's obviously starting to produce. Like, he only had like 5 or 6 points last year as a freshman, and... you know, he's about a point a game in Notre Dame, so maybe it's something. Drew Camaso has been like, he was having a down year, and he seems like the last two games he played really well for BU, and he's probably going to be USA's number one goalie. You know, they have a couple guys at World Juniors. You know, some of the defensemen are interesting, I think. I don't know if it doesn't like Nolan Allen will make Canada, but you know, the US team will have, you know, a handful of guys, and Landon Slaggard, who was on the team last year that won gold for the U.S. and the Colton Dock's having a pretty good, you know, pretty good year. You know, I think there's some hope for him down the line. But yeah, it's not really there's not a whole lot in the system. You know, like there's the fact that Doc was so accelerated. So I mean, he's your first round pick from a couple of years ago. Now Reichel's here. Nolan Allen this year. I mean, a defensive defenseman. How I don't know how excited you can get, and it's not like he's you know, like they need him right now either. So. There's a couple pieces, and you know, I guess we'll see if Reichel gets out of concussion protocol, and if he goes to the World Juniors. Like, I think there's, I think after the new year it'll be interesting, because maybe he plays for Germany the world in the Olympics too. But if this team's struggling or what, I mean, he's sort of the hope, you know, or someone that you can maybe break in, at least something exciting, something different than a lot of the bottom six guys they're bringing up right now. Although I think Josiah has been playing, he's playing pretty well, you know.
Slavin,
like
I've been very surprised by him. He's he's very competent out there.
They have a lot of, you know, like Entwistle, and like these guys are all like you. I think they have a competent bottom six. It's just they need that production in the top
six. Right, because their bottom six isn't a lot of depth scoring. It's good, solid players, but they're not big scorers.
They're a lot of nice fourth liners. Yeah.
If you only got two scoring lines, your scoring lines have to score, and they just haven't been doing that.
Yeah.
Here's one that's off the board. Randall McCloskey asks, when do you think Joel Quenneville will be employed again? I don't think he'll ever have a job in the NHL ever again. Maybe I'm being melodramatic there, but like, you know, we've seen like attempts to rehabilitate Mike Babcock's image, and he hasn't been hired again. And, you know, what Joel was in the middle of is the worst thing we've seen in a sea of bad things. and he's in his early to mid 60s. I don't think Joel Quenneville coaches again in the NHL. Do you?
I've heard from sources that he's positioning himself to coach again. That certainly is his hope. That he, I think that he quickly kind of, yeah, I think that he understood the writing was on the wall when he got into Bettman's office, but he also was positioning himself that, you know, like I'm going to get out and do my penance and get back in. And I think his assumption that is he gets a chance again. I don't put anything past the NHL, right? Like it just,
well, there's that. Yeah.
I would bet against it, but I mean, he was
essentially forced out of a team that wasn't in any way affiliated with what happened. So how could another team bring him on? How would what's his penance going to be? Is he going to like actually actively get out in the community and rehabilitate? I don't know how you do that at this point. I don't know. And I'm not saying he shouldn't get the chance necessarily, though I would lean that way. I haven't given it enough thought to really, I don't see how you can atone enough to have the privilege again of coaching in the NHL again. Just like certainly John McDonough is never going to be president of a team again, and Stan Bowman's never going to be GM of a team again. I don't see how you can go and you know, and I know that Gary Bettman said that if any of these people want to work again, they're going to have to come through me. I don't think he's going to say no. I think he's going to put some kind of conditions on it, and he's going to like hem and haw, but I don't think he's just going to flat out say no. But it's up to the teams, right? It's up to the 32 teams not to, you know, give them those chances. And if they do, then hey, that's capitalism, I guess. But at this point, I would be pretty surprised, I think, is how I would put it.
Yeah, no, I think so too. And then I guess it depends on where the like, I could see a team go about this because the NHL teams do make weird decisions, and then the fan base will probably, you know, like, I think we've seen, you know, when Toronto hired that goalie coach, like, there was enough, you know, like, there was enough voices out there to be like, this is wrong that we, you know, and Toronto ended up getting rid of that coach. So, yeah, I don't know. I guess we'll see what time, you know, like, at some point the Blackhawks are going to start celebrating these 2010 players again.
Yeah.
You know, Jarmolson was there last night just as a spectator. But
yeah, you know, Jarmolson, who is one of the few guys who has not.
His legacy night's still scheduled. I know
Craig Morgan in Arizona and I were trying all summer to get him on the phone or respond to a text, and he wouldn't. And then all of a sudden he's just at the United Center getting an ovation. It was, I don't know, people move on quickly, I suppose, but I guess anything's possible.
Yeah, well, I'm curious when the Blackhawks do, because they obviously rescheduled Hossa's or they postponed Hossa's. They're not a rescheduled date. And right now, as of right now, Seabrook and Jarmolson are, you know, I haven't seen Sharp on do any broadcasts, like,
right.
I wonder if
that was almost like a test to have Jarmolson just like on the Jumbotron and see what the reaction would be, almost like a, you know, check the temperature kind of thing.
He must have been in town for something else, though. I mean,
oh, I'm sure they didn't fly him out just for that. Yeah. But hey, Nick, can you come over from Sweden just so we can put you on the Jumbotron and see how the fans react? Well, sure. I'd love to do that. That's a great idea. All right, Cliff Deutsch with a very important question. What's your opinion on Saint Viator bagels?
Ooh.
Now, okay, I'm a big bagel. I brought a bunch of bagels home from New York. I'm so full of bagels from the last 5 days. I was just in the New York area for a while. I'm a big bagel snob, big time bagel snob, and I like Saint Viator bagels. Scott was
nice.
You sent me some. Yeah, you did early on in the pandemic, which was very nice. But here's the thing. I don't if anyone doesn't know, there's a famous old you know, Montreal bagel shop, St. Vitan. There's a Montreal style bagel, which is very different from a New York style bagel or even like a Jewel kind of bagel. It's like a ring. It's like you're playing ring toss. Like, they're really skinny and have like the hole is just massive in the middle. And they're really tasty. They're chewy. They're good, but they're useless beyond eating them as a bagel. Like, you cannot make a sandwich out of a Saint Viator bagel, because it'd just be like a giant slab of meat in the middle with nothing on either side of it. So, like, I don't know. Like, I like them as like a snack. They're yummy. I like bread and I love bagels, but they are not the most practical bagels in the world. But it's cool to go to there. I've been to the store where, you know, they're making them by hand, and they're throwing them around and stuff. They only come in sesame, I think. There's like it's really weird. There's no flexibility in them whatsoever. It's fun. They're good. I like them, but I don't even think they qualify as bagels, I'm going to be honest with you. They're like,
yeah, I don't have a strong opinion about this. I'm just going to.
Come on, Scott. What are you afraid of? Stop hiding behind your microphone and give an opinion, would you? These are the important issues of the
day. I thought you were going to kill Darnell the other day for his pizza opinion, so I'm going to...
Hey, no, look, everyone's got their place. Like, I don't get mad at people for having their place, but I read his story, and that was not New York pizza. That looked like some fancy artisan pizza, which, hey, I like fancy artisan pizza. I like all pizza. I like deep dish. I like tavern style. I like fancy artisan pizza, and I like real pizza. But, you know, everyone's got their place. I got to, you know, my wife always tells me, don't yuck my yum. I try not to do that, but I fail all the time. I think that's all the actual reasonable questions we received, because I posted this like 10 minutes before we started recording. People want to know if the Blackhawks are going to peel the hit on Kara. I don't think it works that way. No. I've never heard of such a thing. Once the you know, you can appeal down a suspension, you can't appeal up a suspension.
Yeah, no, I mean, they certainly took the look at the hit and stuff. It wasn't like it wasn't being looked at, and certainly when something like that happens, like, they definitely examine it even further. You know, like, it's, they know that how serious it was, and there's obviously a lot of discussion around it. So, yeah, the NHL deemed it as a clean hit from what I understand, and yeah, they're moving on. So. Yeah, so you're in Montreal and Toronto, and then yeah, teams back home, and
a lot of road games lately, man. I thought the team's got to be, I know I'm tired, the team probably is too. It's a lot of traveling around.
Yeah, you know, for them to take off practice today, like, I think they were just gassed, you know, like, it's,
I think they were, I think the Kara hit had something to do with,
yeah,
that too.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah,
they just needed a day to kind of, like, you know, be away. Well, they, yeah, travel today, so I guess it's not totally away, but I don't think anybody felt like practicing today after that.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah, so we will, you'll have game coverage, and we'll have, we'll come up with stuff, and I got a story tomorrow, and yeah, all the usual business.
Yeah, we're still covering this team. We got like 50-something, 60-something games left, so hang with us. Keep listening, keep reading, keep clicking, keep watching.
All right, well, enjoy your bagels and stay warm, and
smoked meat. I'm getting smoked meat, man. I'm in Montreal, come on. I don't even know what meat it is. I think it's brisket of some sort.
Good. All right. Well, enjoy. For Mark Lazarus, I am Scott Powers, and this is Laz and Powers, and we'll talk to you soon.
See ya. And I know that I can fix it. I can help even just a little bit. Won't you let me try?